You're supposed to lay on your side when you're this pregnant, and my son hates it. So he wakes me up every single night with a well-placed foot in a nether region that you don't want a foot.
Now, when is the little homie due?
Hold on. December. Welcome to Highly Questionable. I'm Dan Levitard. That's L. Duncan. This is Bomani Jones. Let's get started.
Who should feel more confident heading into Game 7, the Celtics or Raptors?
The three teams in the East are super similar. I don't feel like a lot separates them. And you always hear us talking about matchups during playoff basketball. And you just saw, because Miami matched up well with Milwaukee, it wasn't that much of a surprise that a five dismantled a one. A lot of people were picking it. And I feel like Boston matches up with Toronto in a way that will allow them to win a Game 7, specifically because what we saw in Game 5, where Boston blew out Toronto, that's something Boston's capable of doing to Toronto, but I don't feel like Toronto is capable of doing something like that to Boston. Toronto has looked great in the bubble, except for against Boston, and I believe a Game 7 right now, even though they've got a heart of a champion and all that stuff, this is when you miss Kawhi Leonard. You need Kawhi Leonard for this game to separate you from Boston, and I don't think Toronto could do it without someone of his caliber.
Dan, I'm not going to argue that the Raptors are the better team because I think we all know that the Celtics are the better team. Just take a look at what happened in Game 6, right? I mean, Cardiac Kemba had 5 points in 53 minutes. We haven't seen someone put up those kind of paltry numbers since stats were a thing in 1951. And Jason Tatum, who's always really reliable with the ball, turned it over, I think, 6 times in just the second half. However, I would say momentum is on the Raptors' side. For only this reason, they played a lot of minutes, did those Celtics and Raptors too. And the Raptors bench is by far just better than the Celtics. So it stands to reason if there's any kind of lethargy or hangover at all, they'll be able to rely on a unit that's given them 50 more points over the last two games against the Celtics than the Celtics bench has been able to. I think that that alone and the idea that they were half a second away from being down 3-0 in this series could be enough to carry the Raptors over.
All right, now Dan does have a point here because we're coming into like trying to stave off another overtime and the players for Norman Powell. Like, did you think that you would live long enough that you would be at this point in NBA season, it's time to go win a game and a team is going to Norman Powell and we're talking about what are their prospects? The thing I have to give the Raptors though, and it really just jumped off the screen, you could dismiss it as heart of a champion stuff, but there is something to be said for the confidence that seems to come to a team that does win a championship. That's a bunch of dudes that are a bunch of low spades at best all around that team, and they play like they are champions. Like, in order for Boston to beat them, they are going to have to beat them. It's not going to be some we somehow found a way to win and accidentally got it done. They're going to have to put a foot on the throat in order to take Toronto out. It's not going to be easy, and if Toronto has shots falling, they got a chance. But if Pascal Siakam is going to keep playing like he did in Game 6, then Toronto's going to lose. It's hard to imagine they could win twice with him playing as poorly as he did.
Football is back. What are your expectations for the NFL season?
I don't know if this is happening to anyone in the audience, but because we are mainlining, because we are overdosing on sports, it is hard to follow everything that's going on at the same time. And now here comes King Sport into the mix with all of the excitement, all of the enthusiasm, trying to push us like a blocking sled one more note toward normal. And I really don't know what to expect. I think that basketball and hockey have spoiled us. I don't know if football is going to be able to survive this as you see college football get hit. You see teams get hit by the pandemic. I can't imagine that football can get through this, even though it's militaristic, even though they're super disciplined, even though there are a lot of young people. I just can't believe that they're going to be able to do this with the way that basketball has done it so successfully. Where we're not even thinking about the idea that a basketball player, an important basketball player, might be gone for a stretch of time. So I'm just looking forward to seeing how it all looks. How's it going to look without fans? Because basketball looks decent without fans. Baseball looks kind of sad. I think college football and football is going to look really weird without fans. I'm not interested right now in the intricacies of who's going to win when. Attrition will teach us over the course of the season who are the best teams. I have no idea what to say to you beyond tonight's game is probably going to be pretty exciting because you got a marquee matchup with two teams where one of them it's not ridiculous that the Chiefs players are talking out loud about 5 and 6 and 7 Super Bowls, even though we would laugh almost any team in history out of a building for saying so, because they have the young quarterback that everybody would say, yeah, they'll probably be in contention for as long as he's healthy.
You talking about what do I expect from this season? I wasn't even aware that it was time for me to start expecting stuff until Monday when I had my fantasy draft. If you did not have a fantasy draft this week, did you really know that the NFL was starting back this week? And that's no shade to anybody. It's just that nothing feels like it normally does. The cues that you normally get from outside that football season is coming, we haven't responded to them in the same way. Go look at what some of those Hard Knocks ratings were. As thirsty as everybody always is for football, they weren't thirsty for that show like they normally are. And that's normally the sign that football is right around the corner. So it's here now, and Thursday night is quite possibly the most action-packed night in the history of American sports. We got the first NFL game. We got a women's semifinal of the U.S. Open with Osaka, one with Serena Williams, and we've got the Lakers and the Rockets playing in the NBA playoffs all at one time. Usually people are starved, and football is here, and it quenches your thirst. That's not what the game is this time. So we're going to watch it, but I have no idea what's coming because I'm not in a rhythm to start trying to guess the hardest sport to guess because everybody get hurt anyway. And that's even before we start talking about the cooties.
I mean, you talk about expectations. Look no further than tonight's game, right? You're talking about Arrowhead Stadium, right? Who has set how many records on consecutive sellouts, who's known as one of like the worst places to play in the entire league. And they can't even get fans in the seats enough to fill 16,000 seats, right? Like they're actually cutting ticket prices. There's still plenty available. They're promising that they'll send out saliva kits just to get people back into the suites. Like, so this idea that there is this fervor around football, I think maybe part of it is that didn't we sort of all expect that the other shoe would drop at some point? I'm not saying that they're going to make it through the whole season, but the idea that their COVID numbers are as low as they are, despite how often they've been testing, I think it's pretty remarkable, all things considered. But to kind of tell you where I'm at with football, typically, yeah, I'd be combing through, I'd be doing my best Mina Kimes impersonation and combing through season previews and rosters and whatnot. And really, to me, what I expect is tonight something to finally be answered that we've been asking for a couple of months now, when it was first announced that the league was going to have Lift Every Voice and Sing played before the national anthem. And everyone said, for how long? I think we're going to figure out tonight will really be it once they start doing the pans of the black football players and realize they only know the first two lines of the song. It's going to be done after that.
I can't wait to hear Lift Every Voice and Sing on a broadcast of a national football game. This is, look, I understand the people who make the argument that it is pandering and everything else, whatever. I love Lift Every Voice and Sing. There is no time that I have ever heard Lift Every Voice and Sing, and it has not made the hair stand up on the back of my neck. I understand that some of y'all are not familiar with the song or whatever it is, but it is here. And if you want to pander to me with this, get somebody to start playing the piano chords or somebody do it right, and I'll be there for it every single time. This is how you pander to me, damn it.
Bo, any chance we get to Stony the Road We Trod, or is that gonna
We ain't got that much time. It's fine. One verse, it's good. Like when is Lift Every Voice and Sing not been right on time? I said it before, I'll say it again. Lift Every Voice and Sing is so good that the white man who dressed up like a Native American on Daniel Boone did a cover of it. He doesn't even know what the song actually is. And guess what? It's a pretty good song, even when it's not intended to be anthemic. This is one of the best things that ever happened to white people ever. They're going to play Lift Every Voice and Sing at this game. Because half of y'all ain't, more than half, a bunch of y'all ain't never heard it before. And you need to hear it because it is dope.
It is so pandering. How did we arrive at a point where they were on the wrong side of history for 4 years? Kaepernick still doesn't have a job. He's in the game in EA Sports, but he's not in the game. In the game, and yet here you are. Bomani can be bought with the first few lyrics of a song.
No, I didn't say they're buying me. I just like hearing the song. You got to take what you can out of this. And no, does this mean anything? Is it anything big? Of course not. But if they want to play Lift Every Voice and Sing before every game, I'm here for it. Why not? I mean, if you go play the other one, why not play this one?
Coming up next on my Soul Stevie show.
When you were speaking about Aaron Rodgers, that is several shades beyond mean. That was flat cruelty. Apologize to the man.
Do Do you question if the Nuggets lost game four because Michael Porter Jr. didn't get enough shots?
Bomani, did I hear you correctly? I was listening to a conversation you were having about basketball a couple of weeks ago, and I felt like you said that the Nuggets, top to bottom, have more sort of offensive talent than any team in the league. Is that right? Do you believe that?
They got a lot of guys you got to guard.
Michael Porter Jr. is one of them. He didn't get a lot of shots up last night. Jamal Murray has not been in this series what he was in the previous series. But here's Michael Porter Jr. telling you what the problem is with the Nuggets being down 3-1.
We kept going to Jokic and Ma. And that's, you know, I think that's they're two amazing players. So you can never get mad at that. But I just think to beat that team, we got to get more players involved. We got to move the ball a little bit better. We can't be predictable against that team. If I'm going to be out there on the floor playing a lot of minutes, I think I should voice that. So I'll probably talk to the coaches, you know, just tell them what I see being out there on the floor.
I don't feel like he's that wrong here. Two guys was enough to knock out the Jazz by 2 points at the very last minute because Murray and Jokic were playing out of their mind. They need to get more out of a guy like Porter if they're going to beat Kawhi Leonard. You've seen the load management stuff with the Clippers. Paul George wasn't that good last night, but Kawhi Leonard is best in the world type of good, and they're going to need more from other guys. It can't just be the two, Murray and Jokic, like it was against Utah.
Yeah, he's not wrong, but like this is exactly what the Nuggets do. I'm just confused as to why he's just not saying something. Like Jokic and Murray, I think this season average 175 touches a game, second most in the last 5 years to only Jokic and Murray from last year. So yeah, while he's not wrong, like this is literally the script that's got them there. I'm not saying that they've been particularly successful, as we've seen it's ended in the playoffs every time. But like this is, I just feel like this is not his place to say, at least not publicly in this way. You would have thought that the gaffes he's had over the last couple of months speaking out of turn would probably prevent him from saying something like this, as opposed to keeping it to the locker room. So no, he's not wrong, but he's technically not right to say it anyway.
Yeah, I didn't have any problem with what he said. I think he probably would have been well served to say it to the team and to the coaches first before he brought it to everybody else. But I do think he's right where he's like, look, it's going to take more than just these two guys. So, L, you said it, that it didn't end so well just going through those other two guys. And by the way, before this year, they didn't have him. Like, he's a different level of talent. He's a little young to be trying to lean on in the playoffs, but I totally understand why he'd be in a situation where he would say, hey, I can probably help you guys out a little bit, right? I don't think this was as bad as people made it out to be. I think if he hadn't got in trouble earlier this summer by expressing some of his personal views, shall we say, we would probably view him talking now through a slightly different lens.
I mean, whenever people talk about the Nuggets' garbage defense, like no one says that Michael Porter Jr. leads the trash brigade. So like,
that's true. That's true. You do skate, I mean, there, Porter.
Yeah, I mean, but so does Jokic. Right?
All of them.
Yogi's been all out there them. Like, ooh, boy, I got the best view of this whole
Donovan Mitchell's not that good. Donovan Mitchell's good. He's great, but he's not that good.
Do you question if you're sold on the blossoming friendship between Aaron Rodgers and Matt LaFleur?
My beloved Aaron Rodgers has had some regression as the greatest quarterback I had ever seen in my life until Patrick Mahomes became what Patrick Mahomes is. And the relationship with his coach has been tense with the organization because it drafted Jordan Love. Here is Aaron Rodgers going into a new season. They were a bit of a fraud last year, by the way. Won a lot of close games. Shouldn't have been 13-3, but let's see where their relationship is right now.
You know, we would have conversations early in the morning and a lot of conversations late at night, you know, about things that we're thinking about. I think those moments and really, like I said, the desert road of rose of all of it being the Zoom meetings this off season, you know, I think really helped our relationship to kind of progress to where we're hashtag friend goals.
I believe him. I believe that you develop relationships with coworkers over time. You learn your idiosyncrasies. You clash. There are some sparks. I don't think that there's any reason for them not to get along, given that they were 13-3 last year. When you're 13-3 and you're winning, usually the coach and the quarterback are getting along.
A thing about being an NFL player, quarterback in specific, that we don't talk enough about that sounds kind of annoying. Like, I like my boss, but do we have to talk like this much? Like, you imagine having a job where you and your boss really have to talk this damn much about every single thing, and you actually have to make a friendship as opposed to just working with whatever the hell it is that you got. Like, you're lucky if you're friends with your boss, right? That's not like a requirement just about everywhere else. But in this world, it is. And they're friends until they're not. Like, this is just the nature of these sorts of relationships with these cats, man. They are friends until they're not. They're friends until he starts looking at Jordan Love a little bit too long, and then Aaron Rodgers remembers what the hell is going on here. Son, they trying to get you out of there, probably by the start of next year.
Yeah, this feels like maybe just like another sort of Aaron Rodgers pot shot at Mike McCarthy. He's already admitted he thinks that they're not getting talked about enough, and everyone's talking about all the other teams in the NFC, and now he's... By the way, like, only Aaron Rodgers could make, like, hashtag friend goals sound about as exciting as a root canal. Now I guess you could say we're hashtag friend goals.
What are you doing going after Aaron Rodgers? What are you doing? Pot shots at Mike McCarthy? How dare you, Al Duncan? What are you talking about?
Well, because the whole deterioration of their relationship and how they hated each other, and now all he's doing is talking about how him and Matt LaFleur are flourishing, or, as I like to call him, glow up Kyle Shanahan. I don't care. I'm not trying to be mean. I care about whether the Packers are going to be good. I don't really care if he's cool with Matt LaFleur. That doesn't matter. As Bill Belichick and Tom Brady have proved, you don't have to like your head coach to be successful.
When you were speaking about Aaron Rodgers, that is several shades beyond mean. That was flat cruelty. Apologize to the man.
Okay. I'm very sorry, Aaron Rodgers, for not caring about your relationship with him.
Do we know if he's still good? Anybody? Do we know if Aaron Rodgers is still good?
How dare you?
He throws the ball away too much. Are we certain? He's kind of old. This is year 16.
The advanced metrics actually hurt him some. He's not what he was, but he's still wonderful.
Tonight at 6:40 p.m. Eastern, Phillies and Marlins.
The Marlins are in the playoff hunt. They were losing 18 guys to the pandemic, so they were already kind of a minor league team, and then they brought in more minor leaguers, and they are right around 500. But last night in the fifth inning, they had scored 8 runs and were down 14 runs somehow in the fifth inning. Let's check in. There was a 3-homer game with the grand slam at the end to make it. That's sad. Sad, empty ballparks. 29-9.
Let's go.
Oh my God. Wow. But this is I can't believe I'm saying this, a crucial stretch of baseball for the Marlins here. They have like 7 games against the Phillies in 4 days or something because of the mutated greed schedule of baseball. Bomani, are you intrigued?
I'm not particularly intrigued, but I have to say I was a little confused. I saw that shot of an empty stadium and I thought they were playing that game in Miami in 2019.
That is a big, come on. That's a lazy joke out of you, Bomani. You're better than that. Elsa, you're obviously intrigued because anything that involves the Braves is something that intrigues you, right?
Well, wait, are the Marlins playing the Braves tonight?
No, they're playing the Phillies, but whatever. There was a Braves highlight.
Yeah, but I'm not interested then in watching the Marlins because it took an 11-run inning for me to turn over last night. So, no.
You've got a sign. Bomani, do you have a sign? I don't know where my sign is. Where did she get the sign?
They don't let me go back to my office.
She's got 2 signs. I'm insanely jealous.
Tonight at 7, Game 4, Lakers and Rockets.
Well, Monty told you, there is a lot going on tonight in sports. So LeBron James, let's check in with him because we're contractually obligated as an infomercial for LeBron James for the last decade to have a LeBron James segment in everything we're doing. He's playing center. He's blocked 4 shots. There's one from behind here somewhere, too, that we've gotten used to. Here it comes. Yeah. Bomani, is this the one you're going to be watching tonight from U.S. Open? If you have to pick one, what's the one you're watching?
My preferences are starting with the tennis, sliding to the football, sliding to the basketball, because I don't have to be on TV tomorrow. So I don't have to be at the mercy of the NFL just because y'all so hype about it. Shout out Naomi Osaka. I like her.
L, are you intrigued?
It's a little inside information, by the way. When you don't have to talk about sports on TV the next day, you're very free to do whatever you want. I have a radio show with Clinton Yates tonight at 9:00, so I'll probably be watching the U.S. Open and also football. So I'm going to go no. But I am intrigued to see if LeBron, who complained about 9 p.m. starts, gets that 7 p.m. Eastern start, and all of a sudden they're just incredibly better. We'll see.
How do we get this far in this and not talk about the house dude maybe having to, like, get out the bubble?
He pulled a Kim, but he was smart because unlike Kima Siverin, he actually used one of the testing ladies, right? A house call.
We're done here. Bomani Jones, get more Bomani Jones, the right time with Bomani Jones, wherever you get your podcasts. And L, tell people about your radio show tonight. What is it that you're doing tonight on ESPN Radio?
Yeah, The Intersection, 9 p.m. Eastern, me and Clinton Yates at the intersection between politics, social justice, and sports.
You have to say it like that. You have to say it like that. Thank you for watching.
I got off the Braves when Brian McCann hemmed Carlos Gomez up at home plate because he was taking too long to run around the bases. And I realized that the team of my childhood, these were no longer Otis Nixon's Braves. These were no longer Deion Sanders' Braves. These were Brian McCann's Braves, and I didn't like it.